Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
People say you can't get good help anymore, but I got the best doorman in the world. I mean, who wouldn't want Mr. Sulu? Hi, good evening and welcome once again to Madam Perry's Salon. I am your hostess and your cruise director, Madam Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry, or to my friends over in the UK, Jennifer Maudette Perry for the mods. And I am so happy to be here. It's going to be another great night. And first of all, let me say thank you to everyone who's been subscribing. Listenership is going way up. Even downloads on the days that we're not broadcasting is just going, it's spiking in the right direction. And I'm so grateful to you. It's partly because I'm having so many excellent guests, and because of the excellent people like yourself to follow me and refer and tell your friends about the show. I just wanted to go over a couple things recently. You know, we had Denny Tedesco on and talking about the documentary he did called The Wrecking Crew about a group of musicians in L.A. in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and his father, Tommy Tedesco, guitarist, was one of them, It included bassist Carole Kay, who is just magnificent, Hal Blaine, Earl Palmer, so many musicians, and a lot of the records, a lot of the music you hear from those days, whether it's from the Phil Spector records. I think the bit that we played had Brian Wilson and Carole Kay, Tommy Tedesco, and I forget who else talking about the work that they did making Good Vibrations and Pet Sounds for the Beach Boys. And there were so many bands then that you listened to, and it might have the band names on the records and everything, but it was people from the Wrecking Crew. But get that documentary, get that video. It will just it takes you back to the soundtrack of your life if you're over 40 years old. And so go to WreckingCrewFilm.com and grab a copy of that. And let's see, who else we have? Even when I started posting on the show, even Glenn Campbell's people are reposting it, and a lot of the musicians that are involved in it are reposting the tweet about that show. So get that. Also, let you know that coming back soon is, I saw Kazem Sultan, who was on not long ago after the recent Todd show, the White Night Tour, and he's going to be coming back soon. He's on tour with Don Felder of the Eagles right now. And after that, but soon we're going to have Prairie Prince from the Tubes and Todd Rundgren, and we're also going to have Greg Hawkes, the Cars, Todd, and Jesse Grass, who's also a guitarist, who's written several books, and he's been playing with Todd a lot. So we've got a lot of fun people coming, plus Bruce Sedano. You may have known him. He used to be with a group called Brooklyn Dreams, but he wrote a lot of songs for his wife because they were on the same label. Actually, that's how they met. His wife was Donna Summer. And so he's got a new CD out, and he's going to be on this Wednesday night. And Hollis Brown will be on Tuesday night. But tonight, I am so psyched about tonight because I have got one of my favorite actors. In fact, my husband and I watched this, like this is our dinner in a movie. He's an actor, he's a musician, he's a writer. He and his wife have got some fantastic projects on, and if I'm very lucky, she's going to be on soon. But most people, I think, in the U.S. came to know this man from Miss Fisher Murder Mysteries. And his name, I'm going to welcome him. He's in he's Melbourne-based in Australia, so you'll get that Australia accent. If he can understand what I'm saying, it's going to be a real big bonus and a tribute to him for his actor's ear. But welcome into Madam Perry's Salon, Anthony Sharp. Welcome, Anthony.
Hello, Jennifer. How are you going?
Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I was a little bit rough earlier this week. I came down a little bit crook earlier this week and had a slather of gigs on this weekend, and had a couple of double headers, and especially Saturday night, I had about 7 hours. We did two gigs back to back, and it was a bit of an effort to push through all seven sets, but we got there in the end, so it was good. Yeah, but no, I'm well now. It's better that the weekend's over.
Well, yeah, I'm so glad to hear that too, because you play on the weekends with two different steady gigs, don't you, or three on the weekends?
We're currently doing
with
bands. I do duo gigs and also full band gigs. So we do two on a Friday night. We start at 7 at night and we finish at 2:30. And on the Saturday, we start at 7 and finish closer to 3 in the morning. So they're long.
Good Lord.
They can be a bit, it's a bit long and punishing. It's about sort of around 70 songs that we sort of generally do, that I sing on the one night after the other. So certainly the voice gets a very good workout, that's for sure.
I'll say, how do you hold on to your voice that long? Because
you get road tough.
All right. How many people sing in the band?
Yeah. There's just me and the guitarist. So generally, we swap it up a bit. But yeah, I end up finding that over two gigs I'll sing sort of between 60 and 70 songs. Just doing sort of cover songs at the moment. So we play rock and roll and pop and all that stuff. We have our crazy punters in there, going bananas from start to finish. We tend to be pretty lively and stupidly we sing a lot of songs that are sort of, up there all night. So by the end of the night, we're certainly fairly tired. We do a Sunday gig as well now. And we've got a little set list called My Voice is Ruined Tour. And that's the Sunday one, and it's all much lower songs and different key changes just to be able to sort of get through, because you tend to be a bit tired. So,
I've had so many musicians on here that have written books, and one recently was Joe Vitale. He's a drummer he's mostly known for playing with Joe Walsh, a lot of other people, and telling the stories. And then Rudy Sarzo from Quiet Riot. You're too young to remember these bands.
No, I know quite right.
Okay. All right. Well, Rudy, the bass player, because he wrote his book is called Off the Rails, and it's mostly about his tour the year that he was with Ozzy and his friend, his friend Randy Rhoads was a guitar player. And it was about the time, too, that's when he died in the plane crash. And but all these crazy road stories and stuff they tell, nobody tells like musicians. And so I am sure you're going to be coming up with a story, I guess once all the statutes of limitations have run out. If you have the same kind of thing there in Australia.
Happens on the road, stays on the road, they say.
I never even heard about it. I don't even know what you're talking about. Because there was one where Rudy's talking about, he's saying, traveling on the bus, I think he was so young and he had to quit Quiet Riot to go on this thing. And he's riding the bus and he said he realized that whenever people were passed out drunk, that the guys, Ozzy and the guys, would do something to them, like shave half their head and then make the other color pink or something. And these people would come out drunk, stumbling into a diner on the road in some small town, not know why everybody was staring at them. And he said, right away, I realized if I'm going to make anything out of myself and have a decent career, I'm going to stay sober. This whole tour, I am not getting smashed here. So, I think Joe said that he and Joe Walsh used to, so that people in the hotels just never seemed to appreciate art, because they would go along on their paintings and put glasses and mustaches and stuff. So, but I'm sure you wouldn't do anything like that. You guys are all a class act. But
no,
I just want you to know that
all,
when the when
all
time.
Good boys.
Of course you are. Of course you are. So, Yeah. So tell me, so can you tell me any kind of crazy road stories now? Because, see, listen, I'll tell you, well, you know, I've got a jazz band. It's called the Jennifer Perry Combo. And my musicians always say sometimes when they get kind of wild, especially on stage, and that's why I ask you about singing, because I have to have a few of them sing to give me a little rest sometimes and probably give the audience a break from my voice. But sometimes when they get wild and get going on with their solos, I say, well, they're so good, why would I stop them? It's like being the headmistress at a school for mischievous but gifted artists, boys, you know, or girls, and I have girl musicians. So, yeah. But because I remember one night we had some people at a convention at a restaurant, and they were all high, you know, they were all having a good time and getting drunk. And so the women started asking to get my band members to go home to the hotel with them. They go, look, our husbands are too drunk to, I guess, do their husbandly duty. Why don't you come? And my drummer, he's from Argentina, he goes, no, I'm tired tonight. How about tomorrow? Tomorrow I've had some sleep. Okay. So
I remember.
And I imagine
we did a. Oh, sorry, you go. Sorry, there's a bit of a delay there.
No, I was going to say, since, you know, you're married, too, and I'm sure you guys get hit on. You know, like my husband's married. He's a guitar player. Of course, since he's the best-looking one, he gets hit on. So I'm sure you get hit on, too, and have to have a lot of a clever way of defending, you know, getting on the offense without losing a fan.
Yeah, well, and look, it's one of those things as well. You know, I think especially the gigs that we're doing now, you have a lot of recurring crowds, and you know, you really do. You've got to try and keep everyone happy, and you know, we have lots of, you know, regular girls that come in and see the shows, and if you're smiling too much at one girl, then the other girls will get upset at you on the other side, and it's a tenuous business, but, you know, it is quite funny. So, you know, sometimes, you know, girls will be there with their boyfriends and they've got their back turned to their boyfriend and just, you know, focused on us up on the stage. And it's really quite awkward because the boyfriend's right there and they're giving you the eye and you're trying to smile and wave and, you know, and keep entertaining at the same time. But, you know, look, it is funny, you know, but it's a business, you know, and do you know that it's a business? We're in there and we're there to entertain, and, you know, I've been singing now for 25 years professionally. So, it's certainly, you know, we just get out there and we slog it out, and, you know, it's, you know, Friday night at 10 PM is really like Monday at 9 o'clock in the morning for other people. You know, it's, I love doing it, but it's a job, and, you know, and we've got to get through. But yeah, I mean, look, we've had some funny stories. I remember once we were down, we were playing down in Tasmania, which is right at the bottom of Australia, and we had a huge night down there, and there's a club, and then we had accommodation above the club, and we all had a big night, and we got on the terps a little bit, as they say, and at the end of the night we finished the gig, and I think the gig finished about 3 a.m, and we sort of partied on for a bit, and then we went up to the accommodation above, but the nightclub was still going till about 7 o'clock in the morning, and I had an audition the next day up in Sydney at 11 o'clock, and I was auditioning back then for a TV show over in America called In Excess Rockstar. I don't know if you remember that one. It was probably about 10,
years
or so. Become the new lead singer of In Excess. And so we're down in Tasmania, down the bottom of Australia, where, you know, it's way, way early in the morning, and there's so much noise going on in the room next door. And I remember stumbled out of bed because I'm trying to get some sort of sleep. And I've opened the door up, and the guy got one of the rooms, and it's just a massive party going on in there, and I've sort of, you know, shuttled the doors back again and gone back in. I've got about half an hour's sleep, got up at seven, I got to bed at six, we flew out to the airport, we flew back to Melbourne, and I caught a connecting flight to Sydney, and I caught a cab from the Sydney airport to this little theatre where the auditions were, and literally didn't stop. So I went in, I was in there for about 20 minutes, tried to do some vocal warm-up, and I was terrible. And then jumped straight up on stage to audition for this show. And I thought, geez, if I get through these first auditions, I'll be all right. And, it was a bit of a rock and roll. And I did end up going through that and going over to America for a couple of weeks, which was great. But I thought, God, if I just need to get through this first one, and I'll have a good story to tell. So it certainly does happen that way sometimes.
Oh, yes, it does, and more than people think. But, yeah, I do remember that show. So how'd you like being on there? What was that like?
I was good. Look, I didn't end up getting through. So there was rounds and rounds and rounds of auditions. So there was two, out of that, there was two Australians that went over to America. I think they did about, I think they went around about 10 countries, and I think there was around 10 to 20,000 people that auditioned for it. So it was just a few were picked. A lot came from America. There was two people from Australia, myself and another guy. And there was another Australian who ended up getting in the show that came from the UK, who auditioned there. So we went over and spent about a week or 10 days in Santa Monica. And then it was a very bizarre thing. We were cooped up in this big hotel, like a big fancy hotel, but we weren't allowed to leave. We weren't allowed to speak to any of the other contestants, and there was 50 of us over there at the time. And they didn't want any prior relationships with any of the other contestants before you actually went on the TV show, understandably, because they want to build relationships in front of the audience. So we all had minders, and we weren't allowed to speak to the other contestants. So it was just this weird thing. And my best, one of the other Australian went over there was one of my best mates over here, another band guy. And so we weren't even allowed to speak to each other. And we pretended that we didn't know each other because we thought if they thought that we did, maybe we wouldn't get onto the show. And then it was just this weird thing. Every day people would disappear and they would, you know, because you do auditions and then if you didn't get through, you'd just be sort of out. And then in the end of that, there was 20 of us left, and we went and sort of got interviewed at CBS there and met with, you know, different casting directors and all this sort of stuff, and then came back over to Australia and just sort of had to wait it out, and then finally got the call and they said, sorry, you're the first on hold. If someone else pulls out of the show or doesn't fit, you'll be in. And I was just like, don't. And so yeah, it would have been real fun times coming over to do that, but it wasn't to be at that time.
Would you think maybe? Now I think there was definitely a girl from Atlanta, Heather Luttrell, who did compete in that. I think for a few weeks.
Yeah, right. I can't remember any of the names now, but there was the girl with the long blonde hair. There was another sort of brunette girl that was in it. You know, there were some great singers in there.
Yeah.
It was funny. There was real characters in the show, and I think sometimes, as an Australian, we tend to be a little bit more laid back, and I think even when you're doing the interviews they're asking the questions, I think we should probably get a bit more excited about things. Australians will sort of go, what does it mean to be on this show? And as an Australian, you sort of go, it'd be all right, you know, it'd be pretty good. Where everyone else says, this means the world to me, you know, this is what I want. And even though we are excited about it, we tend to be a little bit more laid back. And I remember one question there, they said to me, you know, and it was stupidly, I don't know why I said this, it just popped out of my head, but they said, you know, what do you think of when you think of the word rock star? And I said, a wanker. And the guy looked at me and said, what? I said, we use that term over here, you know, you say, you're a rock star, you're a wanker, you know, you think you're so good. And I don't know why I said that. And I thought about it later and I thought that was the title of their show. And I've come out and I've said that to them. So it probably wasn't the smartest move on my behalf then. There's that filter that's to step in front of my mouth sometimes. But it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun going and doing that. And look, it's all an experience. I think that's the thing for me in life is you do things, I love to just do things and say, that was great. I had this experience. It was weird. You know, some things were great, some things were horrible. But, you know, over and all, what a great thing to do. And I think that's what I've sort of been about a lot of the time in life, just like to have a crack at something new.
Oh, gosh, yes. something you would have never, you know, that most people never experience. Even in showbiz, people who have been in showbiz for a long time would have had experience like that. Whereas now we put, I think, our B-list celebrities on things like Dancing with the Stars or Chopped as cooking show celebrity versions. Where they go. But still, those kind of things. Well, listen, I've got so much to talk to you about that I don't know. I'm so afraid I'll run out of time, so I better get moving. And if I loved it. It was good. Now, this is if you want to talk to Anthony Sharp, you can just call in at 646-716-9922. If you're listening live tonight, it's Sunday night, 9 p.m. in Atlanta. It's something a little after 11 p.m. on Monday the 17th in Australia. We have a lot of Australian listeners. But call us 646-716-9922. That's a toll-free call in the continental U.S. And you can just talk to Anthony and ask him a question. So much to do. I'm going to have to be very, very nice so that you'll come back for a part two. So many people in the U.S. Okay, good. So many people here know you as an actor from Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. In fact, you even came to the U.S. to Las Vegas, I think, in May for the Miss Fisher Con. Was that surprise to people on the show that it was so popular here?
It's a wonderful, you know, a wonderful feeling that, you know, we created the show here in Australia, and, you know, in Australia, obviously the audience numbers are a lot smaller because we don't have that sort of population as many of the overseas countries. And, you know, the show still did well here. And it was funny, it used to run up against the AFL football on a Friday night, which is in Australia hugely popular. It is a very tough slot, but it was actually very, I thought it was a very smart thing to do as well, because if you weren't watching the football, if there was, you know, the people that weren't into the football, there was a really good alternative for them to watch. And they did pick up quite a bit of viewership from that fact. But I think we still used to do, you know, with downloads of the show on iView, which is the online way to view it in Australia as well, around sort of the 2 million mark, which is really good for an Australian show. I think it was just sub that. But when, again, like the Deb and Fiona, which are the executive producers, you know, they sold the show around, and we knew that the show was selling really well around the world. I think they sold it to about 120 different territories around the globe. So we did know that it was doing very well overseas, and we got, you know, a lot of good feedback from that. And I think when it got onto Netflix as well, you know, the America following sort of exploded over there. But I think, you know, coming over and really seeing firsthand the enthusiasm that fans have for the show, and going, you know, going to Vegas and meeting this, you know, just a part of the group that were actually able to get there and make it, and seeing how that they've connected right around the world via this little show that we made in Australia on a tiny budget, and now that there's all these people connected from that, it was really special, and it really did. It really affected me. I thought, well, it's such a wonderful thing, and they were a mad bunch, and they were such great fun, and, you know, We sort of gate crashed. They all caught up the first night in the downstairs bar. We did it at the Vidara in Las Vegas Convention Center there. And the first night when we arrived, they were all down having a drink. So we gate crashed that, me and Travis. And then it was great. And they're like, hey! You know, they were buying us drinks, and we were chatting away to everyone. And it was so much fun. We had a ball. We did, you know, the question and answer panel, and we signed autographs, and they had a fashion show there, which we judged. We were part of the judging panel, and it was really good to be able to hang out with them and, you know, hear their stories, and we really had a ball. We hope that it's going to become an annual event, and that we'll be asked back again. We'll certainly come back over and visit. We had a lot of fun.
I got a feeling it will be. And so you felt like they really made you guys feel the love that's for you over here.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, you see, my husband, like, we watch these British murder mysteries or so forth, and we get them on, we buy them on iTunes. So our dinner in a movie is I make dinner, and we watch the, whether it's Midsummer Murders or Death in Paradise.
Yep,
and
yep,
so then
yep.
He bought the series because we never could get on schedule with TV from Miss Fisher. So he went ahead and bought all three seasons. So that's what we've been watching, starting from the very beginning for the ones that we've missed. And so when I told him about the FisherCon, because he was asking me, you know, what we were going to talk about and what's going on, and he said, wait, it was in Las Vegas? He goes, was that back when I was there for the he's in Satellite Communications. He said, is that when
no.
I was there for the trade show? And I said, because it was already passed. And he goes, you mean I could have gone over there and seen Miss Fisher? And I said, you mean I could have gone with you and seen all the guys? So, so I said, well, maybe next year. If they do it again around the same time, I said, maybe next year then we can hit it together and go have fun. So
well,
I'm so glad. I'm so glad.
Well, we'll definitely, yeah, we'll, you know, we definitely love to get back over there. It's good fun, and Vegas is a crazy old town.
I get the feeling, Will. So remember, if you want to talk to Anthony, 716, oh, excuse me, is that the number? 646-716-9922. And I have somebody on the line right now that is a good mutual friend of ours. And enter into Madame Perry's salon. Oh, by the way, are you comfortable in here, Anthony? Did you get a nice cushion to sit on? It looks
I
like the inside
am.
Of
I've got
Jeannie's
a great
bottle.
Cushion.
Everybody
it's a
knows.
Big
so
red velour.
Good.
A big red velour couch, and I'm sat back. I'm leaning back with my head resting against a cushiony wall, so I'm feeling very comfortable. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay, well, coming in here, and I think she's going to come in and find a nice. She's got her own regular seat in here. Is our mutual friend Sherry Rabinowitz. Come on in, Sherry.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Anthony.
Hello, Sherry. How are you going?
I'm fine. How are you? Long time no talk.
It is. Not that long.
For real, yes, Sherry knows the coolest people, and I'm so grateful to her for facilitating this for me so that we could have you on here. And Sherry, did you go to the FisherCon?
No. I had some problems.
Oh,
I
no.
couldn't go.
Oh, well, I'm very sorry to hear that. Well, maybe next year we'll all be there. See, like if my husband goes, and he's going to have a room paid for by his company, so we can all go. Well, we can't all stay in there, everybody, but I can. So, but we can all
stay
yes, together.
Ah, yes, squeeze a few in there.
We'll squeeze. Well, yeah, you know we will.
We'll squeeze into one room. That would be interesting.
Yeah, pajama party. So, Sherry, what did I was about to ask Anthony about this film. Well, you know what? Let me talk to you about this first. Since we talked about the rock star, the NXS thing, when you were on The Voice, the Australian version of The Voice, and
yeah.
I'm trying to watch. They only show us 22 seconds of a song, and when I try to go to the website, they say that they want that doesn't. We can't stream it into the U.S. for some reason. You guys are very restrictive about
yes,
that. So,
yes, it's a bit of a pain. You need the IP address to do that. It's a bit of a bummer.
So, well, how was that experience? And I know you're not going to make a
that
big
was,
deal
look,
about it, okay? You're going to be very laid back and Australian, but...
Yeah, it was okay. No, look, you know what? It was. I was a little bit hesitant going into that. And it was really good, and I found that they were very, very accommodating to the musician. As you know, the show it is. You know, it's predominantly it's a reality show with music, and you know they've got to cater for both the storyline and they've got to cater for you know for the musician as well. That's what reality television is. But in amongst all that, you know, we were treated very well. It was a very encouraging and supportive crew in there, and you know it's certainly they said to me as well, oh, you know, you're used to being in front of the camera and you're used to doing gigs, so this should be easy for you. And I said, this is not like anything that I've ever done before. And I remember, you walk out onto the stage, and it isn't, the first ones aren't filmed live, but it is live for all intents and purposes, because if you stuff it up, that's what's going on to national television. And I remember, you walk out and there's a room full of people there, you know, a few hundred people in there that are all totally silent. There's four chairs facing the other way. And, you know, you can feel your heart beating in your chest and you feel the stomping of your feet. You know, you walk around and the particular song that I did had, well, the first one was Mr. Brightside. And it was basically four clicks, four count in. And then I start straight in with coming out of my cage as the guitar starts. So there was no actual, a really good cue for, you know, for pitch or that sort of just that, you know, that one rep that you get before you start. So, and they've done the click and I was up there and I've just gone, oh shit, was that the first click or the second click in my head? I missed it. And there was just that momentary where my brain just imploded just at the start, just for a split second. And I haven't actually watched it back yet, but I'm sure if I did closely enough that I'd see just a little mini meltdown just for a microsecond before I actually started, hoping that I was coming in on the right part. But it's certainly weird, you know, and it's, and I finished the song and I remember they were asking questions, and not all of the questions go to where, and I remember them talking about something, and I said, yeah, I do acting. And I thought, I didn't even say I'm an actor. I said, I do acting. You know? And I was just like, oh my God, I can't even speak properly, and I'm supposed to be an actor, and it was really quite funny. But your brain is a very surreal experience, and I think I've often sat at home on those shows and gone, oh, come on this or come on that, and you know, when you're on stage there, it's a very different feeling, and it's certainly nerve-wracking for everyone that first time. And if you have done it professionally before, there's those sort of feelings you have about, you know, if I stuff this up, then I'm going to look, you know, silly because I'm supposed to be a professional. But it's certainly a very different environment. As much as they try to make it as comfortable as they can for you, being into that environment is very, very challenging as a performer. But you know, hopefully your years of experience cover up all the fear and shock that's going on inside your body. And another cool experience. And, yeah.
My favorite clip was your wife and your daughter jumping up and down for you. That was so sweet.
Yes. I love that.
Oh, they were so funny, weren't they? They just, and, you know, my daughter, God love my daughter, you know, Lucy, her name is, and, you know, it was both so great. It was great to have them there and sort of be part of something, you know, something a bit different. And, you know, we came back home and my daughter's got all these, I don't know if you have them over in the States, they're called Beanie Boos. This little toy with these massive eyes, and you collect them all, and you know, there's about a bloody hundred of these toys. My daughter loves them. Anyway, she's been getting, she gets the stool out, she gets the four stools, and she sits on one of the stools, and then she plays the different songs now, and you know, plays my song, and one of the Beanie Boos will be sitting on the floor there pretending to be the singer, and then she turns around if she thinks that the version's good enough. And you know, it's just great. You know, a lot of the different projects that me and my wife do, that, you know, our daughter, she really, she loves them. And if, you know, my wife was doing a musical, and so my daughter, and she's only eight, and she learned all the songs and the music and the words, and she really loves, you know, I hope that, you know, she gets that passion when she gets older too, because she certainly loves it at the moment.
Well, what musical is she doing?
My wife, she's finished now. She was doing a musical called Song Contest, which was a sort of a spoof of the Eurovision's Song Contest. And it's an Australian production. And so that ran here for, I think it ran here for about 4 to 6 weeks in Melbourne. And it's very funny. She played this Russian sort of co-host, and she had to learn the Russian accent for that, and it was quite funny. So we had a couple of months of her walking around the house and, you know, speaking everything back with a Russian accent, and as we do, it's quite funny. But, yeah.
Well, this is you know, in a way, this is very much her life, because your wife Julie is a filmmaker, isn't she?
Well, she Julie does lots of things. She sort of to try and quantify. Julie started out as a comedian. She was a comedian for about 20 years, doing that, doing stand around the room stand up. That was her real shtick, was to be able to. She can walk out into a room and just say, you know, who are you? What do you do? And bang, she's got comedy gold. You know, and she used to play a character in a show at a cabaret restaurant called Sarah Pax, and it was this little sort of they called her the lovable drug sponge, and she played this sort of. Like she was a drug addict. That was the thing on Sarah Pax, which that's the old drug that I can't remember. It was something that a lot of mothers ended up, I think, getting on to sort of dope them down a bit. and so this was this character, but she was so lovable that all the old ladies and everyone would just try and mother her. And the character was just such a wonderful character, and she would get away with the most. You know, she could say or do anything, and as any other character, you'd be crucified. But this character was so lovable and so self-effacing that she would just get away, and she could be so cheeky. And so she did that, but then she does a lot of producing, and she works with shows. She works sort of, you know, directing shows and writing shows and all in those sorts of areas. So she does a lot of stuff, but not so much into the television. We did work together on a show that we were trying to get up called The Volunteer Diaries, which was about sort of was a little bit before sort of volunteerism became popular, and it was about traveling around the world and not having any particular skills, but showing people how they could go and get involved with these great causes, and also at the same time they could have just a fantastic, you know, unforgettable holiday. But I think we were a little bit ahead of our time, and it wasn't the right time to do that, and we filmed some stuff in Indonesia with the orangutans, and also in Thailand with the elephants. And there's a great, and I should maybe we can put it in the show notes. There's a great little video that I did on Vimeo. I posted up where I was playing the guitar, and an orangutan came down, a wild orangutan.
Oh,
she sat right in front of me, and she ended up plucking one of the strings on the guitar, and it was the most amazing.
How
amazing
cool.
Moment. It was just amazing. Siswe, her name was, and she was the dominant female orangutan. Yeah, so maybe we can post up that.
Oh gosh, yes,
it on your Facebook page.
You could put it on. I'll put it on something. Because Sherry, I have it. First of all, I've got another caller here waiting for Anthony, and I have it on good authority that I may be getting Julie on Madame Perry Salon. So we'll get her to tell us even more, and we'll have some videos too then. So unless she thinks I'm too,
I won't
unless
think
she thinks this
story.
Is too crazy, listen to it now. She sounds like my kind of gal. All right, so
she says
welcome into Madame Perry Salon. She said what?
Huh?
She says that I pinch her jokes and I tell them badly, so I won't pinch her stories as well.
Okay. I got it. All right. Well, welcome to Madame Perry Salon. And is this Andrea?
Yes. How did you guess?
Hello?
I don't know.
Can you hear me?
At the area code. Yes, Andrea, can you hear us? This is Andrea Robinson from Madera, California.
Hey,
Andrea. Yeah, so I'm happy.
So
happy. How are you doing?
I'm so doing well. How are you doing?
You. Doing great.
great to be here.
I love this world where we can connect with people all over the globe. It's just so exciting. So thank you, Jennifer, for finding him and bringing him for us. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Oh, what were you going to say? Okay. So I'm sorry if I missed this, but I was wondering if you had any experience in theatrical productions, you know, and plays and whatnot before you started getting into film and TV?
I started out doing music. Started out as a guitarist first, and then a bad one, and then became a singer. And I worked in a restaurant. It was a comedy cabaret restaurant where I met my wife, and started sort of doing. It was different skits and comedy skits and a little bit of acting there. And there was a few sort of television actors that were working there at the time, and they basically suggested to me to get a headshot and get a resume and send that into the casting agents. And I sort of stumbled into it that way. So I hadn't actually done any study or any sort of theatrical background first, and just sort of started getting some commercials and doing that. My first role, it was a little bit embarrassing, it was for a show called Australia's Most Wanted. And I was playing a criminal, and I'm not going to say what type of criminal, because my mum was just horrified when I said that I got my first acting gig to playing this particular part. So it was like a reenactment of a crime. And that's how I got my actor's union card. So it was quite funny. But it went from there. That's how it sort of happened. I sort of started studying in later life with the acting, not so much at first.
Okay, so you really have no advice for anybody going from theatrical stage plays into TV. But I think that's amazing that you... okay. Well, I used to do a lot of theater, and I really enjoy acting in general, and I don't think you should be too ashamed. I agree with you. Don't tell your mom everything, but you shouldn't be ashamed of doing it, you know. And unless she's listening, it should be okay to tell us. It's just us chickens. We're not saying anything, you know. But I think it's great that you came into the music industry. I'm kind of surprised to hear that. That doesn't sound very normal to me.
I think that you can, you know, I guess my advice and the way is that there's no particular, you know, way in or correct way in to get into into the acting or into music or into any industry. Lady Gaga, there's an interview with her recently talking about how she always wanted to be an actor, and, you know, and she ended up, you know, would she have had the acting career that she's had she not gone into, you know, to music first? I think the main thing is, you know, going from, you know, from being on stage to being in front of the camera, there's obviously a lot of technical elements and it's a very different medium. And, you know, I think one of the big things with television as compared to theatre is that, you know, in television, you know, you get the script, you do a read through with the cast, and that's the last time, you know, and it's cohesive and you hear everyone doing all the parts and you get to hear the story. Once that's happened, it gets chopped up logistically. So that from then on, and generally when you're in television, you'll be doing what's called a block. You film one block at a time, and one block will be either two or three episodes of a television series, depending. And it might not even be the two concurring episodes. It might be one from here and, you know, episode one and five, who knows. And so from the point where you start filming, you know, from scene to scene, there is no continuity. You know, you really have to have your... you know, where you've just been in the scene before and where you're going to the scene after. And you really have to know those things, you know, and have done your homework for those to make sure that when you get there, you know, to film that scene, that that's going to come out and you're going to be at the right moment and have the right, you know, story in your head, I suppose, for lack of a better word, to, you know, to be able to move that story forward in front of the camera so that when it is cut back together, it's all correct, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a little hard. And I think coming from somebody who's been on the stage, it's easy to overact because there's so much about film. And in other words, you don't know if they're, or do you? I mean, do you know if they're doing a tight close up on your face or if they're doing like an establishing shot? We do.
They'll sort of, you know, generally you'll start to get to know those things. They'll say, you know, if we're going to pick up a two shot with this camera. Often in TV, they'll do more than one camera at a time. So they might be picking up a single, which you may know is on you, or it may be on one of the other characters. And then there's a two shot or a, you know, group shot, you know, wide or whatever it is. You'll know that And you do get told that. Otherwise, you know, always, you know, there's no dumb questions on a set too. You always ask. But in terms of, you know, like an overacting, you know, and I remember one of the acting coaches saying to me recently, and which is quite a common thing, if you focus on what you want to get out of a scene, and, you know, I just did a class recently with an Australian guy, Les Chantry, and he was a fantastic acting coach. And he said, there's two things that you ask yourself, and it's very simple, is, you know, what do you want the other person in the scene to do or to say by the end of that scene is one thing to ask. And then try and bloody get it, no matter what that text says, because we all say things, we'll all say and do anything when we're trying to get something. So it doesn't really matter what the text says. You've got to still use that text to try and get the goal you want. And he said the other easy way to ask that is to say, if my character could rewrite this scene to get what we wanted, how would we rewrite it? And that's what you want out of that scene. And what that does is it keeps you focused, you know, on the other person in the scene and not focused on your own acting and, you know, am I doing this right? Because as soon as you're focused on, you know, am I too big or am I too small, then you're analysing yourself and you're not in the scene and you're not in the moment, I suppose, is the easiest thing. So it's really just trying to keep that focus on the other person and what you're trying to get, engaging them, you know, as you're leading through that scene, you know, am I winning here? Do they understand me? You know, are they getting upset? Are they happy? Are they angry? If you keep all your focus on that, it keeps, even especially in theatre as well, it can keep a scene, the same scene, night after night fresh, because the little small changes will make you approach things in a slightly different way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that part makes sense. Yeah. I guess the thing that's valuable about that is even if they're cutting it up into blocks and you're filming out a sequence, that would carry the point of the story forward. So you wouldn't
Absolutely.
Get so disjointed, you know, because you would know, okay, right now I'm trying to get so-and-so to do this or say this. And actually, it
Yep.
is the way we approach life. I mean, every conversation we have, we're trying to get something or
That's
assist
exactly
somebody.
Right. Yeah.
We always have a motivation, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, look,
really,
I think
really
that's
good.
And just getting out there, and there's a lot of great websites, you know, out there that you can, you know, if you're not union and you want to start getting, you know, getting involved in, and I think, you know, student productions and independent productions, you know, a lot of them aren't paid, but nowadays the equipment that they're shooting on, the production qualities are just amazing, and you know, you can go and shoot things if the script is good, even if you think maybe at first the script isn't great, but there's this one scene that's, gee, that'd be great for my show. Well, I've never played a mum that's, you know, breaking down, you know, you're broken down at, you know, at work or something like that, and you go, that I really want that. So do that film, do it for nothing, but get that scene and build that showreel and get a strong showreel up, and then, you know, the more you can, you know, do and be active and get with other people that are trying to make, you know, these productions, and it's a great way to get started and get into the industry. It really is. Action breeds action.
It's a great idea of getting a really great idea. Well, I really appreciate it.
And that's
my
top 10 tips on the...
Yeah, when's your next book coming out? Yeah.
So I'll put that in the show notes.
Really awesome. All right, well, cool. I guess I'm going to listen. I'm going to go ahead and hang up to free you up for some other calls, but I want to just thank you, and I think you reminded me of some things and made it sharper in my mind, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, the final thing I'd say, and this has been my motto in life on that, is bite off more than you can chew, and then chew like hell. That's a great way to approach life, I reckon.
I like that.
I love it.
Well done.
All right.
Thank you so much, Andrea. All right, love you so much.
All right, sweetie.
All right.
Love you.
Thank you. I think that kind of reminds me of the quote by Picasso that inspiration, I think this is how it goes, inspiration exists, but it finds you, but it has to find you working.
Yes, that is odd.
You know,
that's great. That's
sort of
great. I hadn't heard that.
You answer that beautifully.
Yeah, you know where. Yeah, thank you.
I don't. I love giving advice, even when people don't want to hear it. I bloody ramble on. I do. No, but I do. I get passionate about a lot of things. So you know, always love having a chat like that.
That's good. We've got another caller in for you, Anthony. And I was going to say that the Picasso quote about you know who I heard that from? Johnny Marr, the guitar player.
Oh,
Johnny
there
Marr.
You go. Yep.
For the Smiths. Yeah, that's
fantastic.
Where I first heard that from. In an interview he was doing, people talk about interview. He goes, yeah, but you know, inspiration finds you working. Well, welcome. Coming into Madame Perry's salon is somebody I'm delighted for you to meet. And it's somebody you know, Sherry. It is my BFF. Do you use that expression in Australia? BFF, your best friend forever?
Yes, best friend forever.
All right. Yep. This is my BFF, the Queen Diva, Kenya Colbert, host of Everything Relationships. Hey,
Kenya,
come on in. Find your usual seat. Kenya, like pronounce like the country.
Great.
Hello,
Kenya.
How are you? I am wonderful.
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you. I'm enjoying the show. Hi, Sherry.
Oh, great.
Hey, Kenya.
So you guys have been having fun in here. You guys have been talking about a lot of things. Geez, are you tired yet, Anthony?
No, I'll talk underwater. That people generally tell me.
Oh my gosh, we must be soulmates then. Jeez Louise, that's me. I love that you guys have been having fun with this thing and talking so much about. I can hear the passion in what you do. So it's really cool that you enjoy it so much. Just want to tell you that.
It is. It's great. It's life's short. It's a very short life you get. You got to try and squeeze as much as you can in.
Oh, my God. You sound like me. Jennifer, I think we've met before in another life.
I think so. So here's something I'm wondering. I'm sorry, Kenya. And Kenya, yes, she is my BFF. We have been roadmates, road travel mates and friends for more years than we'll admit to. At my age anyway, not her. She's young. But Anthony, you had hey, we met in 1999 and we've been partying like that since. We wanted to ask you about a couple of features. A couple of films. You worked on the there was something called the Short and Sweet Festival, and see, you were in play Red Wire, Blue Wire, where with Best Play, and who won Best Actor for that, Anthony?
I won Best Actor for that. That was the first. That was my first play. I was quite wrapped in that. it was a festival, and I had a director that I'd worked with, Simon Trevorrow, an Australian director here, and we did a film called There's a Bluebird in My Heart, and it was a wonderful film, and he's a very very talented director, and I just every chance I can get to work with him, I'll take it. And he said, look, I just got asked very last minute to go in this Short and Sweet Festival. And he said, look, everyone else has been sort of preparing for this for the last couple of months. We've got, I think it was just over a week or something. He said, I've got this play, been given a play, and he said, are you interested in doing it? And I said, sure, why not? I'll give it have a go. And it was only, I think it was about a 10-minute play. So I thought, because I haven't done the whole 1 and 2 hour on stage as a play, and it's always frightened the hell out of me to have that many lines down. So I thought, 10 minutes, I can do 10 minutes on stage, just like a long scene. And we threw this play together really quickly. It was a great little play about just quickly. It was based on there was a lady that's got a bomb strapped to underneath her chair in a work environment, and I come in as the bomb, the diffuser, and I've got the mask on and everything, and she's sitting there. Anyway, she asked my name, and I go turn around to introduce myself because I haven't seen her face at this stage. Anyway, it turns out that we went out on a couple of dates, and then I didn't return her calls, and I didn't go up for coffee, in inverted commas. So it just gets to be this really awkward thing where as this bomb's going, and then I snip the wrong wire, and then it starts to count down quick, and then you're finding out all this stuff that's happened between the two, and it has all these great little twists and turns, and it was such a well written, I can't remember the name of the writer offhand, but and anyway, we did it, and we performed that over a couple of weeks, and then we won best play, and then yeah, at the end they said best actor Anthony Sharp, and I was just like, oh my god, I couldn't believe it. And I was sort of thinking, oh, I hope I'm sort of translating to on stage all right. So that was really nice to get that and stick it in the back pocket, so to speak.
Congratulations, yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah,
very good. Because I love film and TV. I love the camera, and I love how things work on a set, and I love the fact that things are broken up, and you know, and the shot, the frame size, and how that's used to tell a story, and I love film, and I love the camera. I think, you know, more so than having a real desire to be on stage. Maybe that'll come a little bit later, but for the moment, the medium that I really enjoy is film and television.
Wow,
this,
you
know, we've
wonderful.
Only got about three. Very cool. I've only got about 3 or 4 minutes left. And so, yeah. I know, it flies by, doesn't it?
It does.
Okay.
All right. I'll try and answer succinctly.
There's a couple of other things. I don't know. I'm going to let you tell me what to do with the last 3 minutes, because there's so many things I wanted to ask you. There's a couple of short films, a feature film and a short film. Carp Made the River Green is a short film, Mutt feature film. And also, did I mention? Audience, listeners out there, the wonderful people that keep Madame Perry's Salon going, and Kenya and Sherry and Andrea, that I mentioned that Anthony Sharp has climbed up to base camp on Mount Everest.
Whoa.
Yeah, the Mount Everest. I know.
I did.
I didn't know that.
That's so cool, Anthony. Lots of things. Wow. That was something to do in the spare time. Yes. That's probably part two. That one, that's a whole other story.
Oh, okay. All
that's
right.
A whole other story.
All right. Then
indeed.
That's a teaser.
I think, look, if a couple of minutes.
Okay, that's
I
a teaser.
I suppose the next stage and the next thing that I'm doing at the moment, I'm actually trying to, at the moment, I'm working through getting a visa. I'm planning on trying to come over to America and having a bit of a crack over at the American market, and working with an American director at the moment and an Australian screenwriter, and we're working on a project for a feature film. And I can't really say too much about that at the moment, but it's an exciting little project that will hopefully come to fruition next year. And hopefully you'll sort of see me over there in the States. I'll definitely be... having a bit of a crack at it anyway. And I was going to say too, I've got to be a little bit more with. I've got to get on top of my social media. So if anyone's out there, Anthony J Sharp is my handle for Instagram. I'm not really a Twitter person. I post some things up occasionally, and my Facebook is The Anthony J Sharp. And I, you know, please do jump on and send me a message, or you know, give me a like, or anything that you want to do. Follow me on Instagram. That'd be great. So I can share my different things that I'm doing with you live.
I love it.
All right, we'll do that.
Love
and
it,
that
love
way
it.
You'll keep us
that'd
up too, since we didn't get to talk about Mutt, a feature film you've been in, or Carp Made the River Green. So you'll have information on that where we can follow it, as well as your website.
Let's do another one. Let's do a part two.
Really?
I love that.
All right, I got a witness. So I got.
I'm a witness.
Thank you so very much.
Always happy to chat
and
to you, lovely ladies.
Thank you.
I've got to give big love to. I have to give big love to you, Anthony, for being so generous with your time, but also to Sherry Rabinowitz, who facilitated this for me and sent me an email saying, hey, would you like to have Echo? Yeah! So thank you, Sherry.
And she's just wonderful. Thank you, Sherry. You're wonderful. She's a
yes,
wonderful
she is.
Human.
Wonderful.
She is.
Thank you.
And,
you're
thank
wonderful, Anthony.
Audrey.
Well, thanks so much for having me on the show. I've had a ball. I love having a chat. So I just get my cup of tea and I sit down here, and it's always good fun.
All right, good. And before we have Anthony Sharp Part 2, and Kenya and Sherry and Andre and everybody's going to still be on back for that, be back and we're here for that. But before that, I hope to have Julie Sharp on. Or does she use – I'll have Julie on if I can get into her schedule.
Yes, that would be great. That would be great. She's looking forward to coming on and having a chat too. She talks as much as I do. See you later.
Oh, good.